My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. No Mark Willard today. It's Mark Grandy alongside Dan Dibley. Mark Willard will be back on Monday. Happy Friday to everyone out there. It's a nice day in the city. Hope everyone is gearing up for what should be a fun weekend. I want to hear from you guys all afternoon long. We're chatting with Alden Smith coming up in an hour at 4 o'clock. Former Niner put together the best like three-season stretch that a pass rusher maybe has ever had as a San Francisco 49er. He was key in the Niners' success, and he played on the same defense as Patrick Willis, who is being enshrined in Canton as a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame this weekend. That's coming up tomorrow. And Dibs to gear up for that ceremony, seeing Patrick Willis going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame at Canton. Jim Harbaugh, his former head coach, chartering a flight to take him, Navarro Bowman, Delanie Walker, some other former Niners all the way out there to Canton to see Patrick Willis, the leader of that defense, the leader of that era of Niner football, really the first player who kind of changed the culture of that era of Niners football, to see him go into the Hall of Fame. It's good to see Harbaugh, who's now head coach of a different team, and checks notes. Pretty busy this time of year.
Yeah.
Take off a day to fly out to Canton to watch a great go into the Hall.
That's
pretty cool.
Awesome. Yeah, very cool. And that, you know, gives me a little bit more of a thought of, you know, points for Jim Harbaugh for having the perspective. And he's a guy who loves his team, and he's always been a player's coach, but to take time out of his own camp. And I know we're not exactly deep into camp where, you know, you're getting ready for week one and all the rest of it, but to have that thought, to take that time and get Delanie Walker and other great members of that team and fly out there and support P. Willie, that's awesome. It's good to hear.
If there's anybody who thinks that this week of training camp is the most important week on the face of the earth, it is Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh thinks every day of every second of training camp is the most important moment that he's ever lived. So the fact that he's willing to take off at least a good portion of a day to fly out there, and let's see, it'll be, of course, Navarro Bowman along with Jim Harbaugh, Mike Iupati, Deshaun Goldson, Jonathan Goodwin, Will Tukuwafu, and Delanie Walker will be on that jet rented out by Jim Harbaugh.
Perfect.
That's awesome.
And yeah, and a lot of memories. And you think back to the Super Bowl year of 2012, which culminated in the Super Bowl in 2013. And, you know, we were actually out there. I was doing a show called The Rise Guys at the time, and 95.7 The Game was in its relative infancy. and our PD at the time, Jason Barrett, decided that he would fly the whole team out there. And so every show, we went out to New Orleans and we spent we spent the week and we did shows at the media center, and we went out to the convention center, and ultimately we went out and had the press conference, what they always do with the Super Bowl halftime performer, which happened to be Beyonce. And I remember sitting in that room and watching Queen Bee walk in, and you know, everyone's like, had their phones out, and you know, the cameras are click, click, clicking, and Beyonce's taking questions. And it was like, oh my God, this is incredible. The Niners, New Orleans, the Super Bowl. And then, of course, the power goes out, and they kind of gave them new life in the second half. And they were so close again, so close part one to winning a Super Bowl. And now here we are, three Super Bowl losses later, and it feels like they've been so close, Mark, three different times, and they just can't, they haven't been able to get over the hump.
Maybe, I mean, this could be a storyline as we get further on into this coming football season. The Super Bowl again this coming year, New Orleans.
Yeah, good
the
call.
The same building.
And I wonder if our PD now will send all of us out there.
Yeah, Nahigian, you listening?
Matt Nahigian, yes. Send, and back then it was four shows. It was mornings.
Yeah, so you don't have to send as many people out there.
Yeah, there was two midday shows and there was an afternoon show. It was Rise Guys, and I'm trying to remember. And in the midday, they had a show. I can't remember their names. And then the afternoon, what? Oh, it. Yeah, we're getting a no.
Stop talking about it. Move on.
No, it's a no as far as him sending the entire station. So there you go. Maybe one show. Butcher and Vontae got to go to Philly, so maybe it's the afternoon's turn.
Yeah. Well, they were also at this past Super Bowl, which was awesome for them.
Very good for them.
I was a little jealous.
Totally. And, you know, Steiny and Goo got to go to Vegas, so... You know, Willard and I got to go to Linden to recruit.
How'd that work out?
to try and get Aaron Judge to come to the team. Whatever. I would love to have them get back to New Orleans, but just thinking about Alden Smith, and you mentioned Harbaugh and Justin Smith, and of course Colin Kaepernick, and you know, Kendall Hunter and Frank Gore, Michael Crabtree, and all the other names. It just brings you back to another time when the Niners were so close to getting it done.
Yeah. Yeah, stories that I'm sure are going to be shared on that flight as they all head out to Canton, Ohio. I would love to be a fly on the wall inside of that plane that Harbaugh is renting and chartering out to get to Patrick Willis's Hall of Fame enshrinement at Canton tomorrow. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I can't wait to hear his speech and what all the others say about him as well. But thinking about Patrick Willis and his career and what he meant to the 49ers and those shortcomings in the big moments, that Super Bowl loss, the two conference championship game losses, the first one to the New York Giants, which felt like, oh my God, are we on this stage? Like, this came out of nowhere. I can't believe we're even here, but it still ended in heartbreak. And Kyle Williams muffing that punt, fumbling that punt.
Oh, God.
I'm mad that I even had to say that, but that's how it started. And then the following year, you come back in the NFC Championship game against Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Roddy White, Tony Gonzalez, and the Atlanta Falcons. On the road, you came back from down 17-0. You win that game. Then you go to New Orleans in the Super Bowl to take on your own brother, John Harbaugh, leading the Ravens, Jim Harbaugh leading the Niners, Colin Kaepernick, who's been lighting the NFL on fire with his play and his running. And you get behind big in that game. And then Jacoby Jones opens up the second half by returning the kickoff for a touchdown. And it nearly got kicked out of the back of the end zone. He took it 109 yards for a touchdown. And you're thinking, oh my God, this game is over. We're going to get blown out in the Super Bowl. Then the lights go out. 35-minute delay.
Jeez.
And you come storming back. Vernon Davis, Colin Kaepernick, Michael Crabtree, Frank Gore. You're working down the middle of the field. You get all the way down. You're about to take the lead, and you could not connect with Michael Crabtree, and you fall just short. And then the following year, you don't have as good of a regular season. The Seahawks, the up-and-coming team, they win the division, Dibs. You got to go on the road to Green Bay. You win in the frozen tundra. Then you go to Carolina. You beat the upstart Panthers and Cam Newton. And then you go to Seattle for the showdown in the NFC Championship game. And we all know, of course, how that one ended. Richard Sherman deflecting the pass away, interception to close the deal. The Seahawks go on to win the Super Bowl that should have been yours. And in that game, Navarro Bowman messes up his knee. And the next year was rough. You only win 8 games. Harbaugh's out. And then out of nowhere, Patrick Willis retires and it's all over.
Right.
Just as fast
as
it started.
All over.
All gone.
Yeah.
And just thinking of how that Niners era came and went, and it's kind of bookended by the beginning and end of Patrick Willis's career. It makes me extremely nervous for this upcoming season of 49er football.
Man.
Because you never know how long this window is going to stay open for. It closed awfully shut for the last one.
The way you portrayed that, the parallel to Dre Greenlaw getting hurt, and, you know, Navarro Bowman is kind of the Dre Greenlaw character, and, you know, Dre Greenlaw got hurt in the Super Bowl, and I know Bowman got hurt in the conference championship game, a little bit different, but similar to where Navarro Bowman's career was never the same again. And I hope Dre Greenlaw is able to come back from this, but the parallel would be for, you know, what you were laying out, this season would be a disappointing year. It would be an 8-8 kind of a year, and, you know.
And then Fred Warner would retire.
Right.
That would be the parallel.
That would be the parallel.
And like, that sounds absolutely...
It sounds ludicrous.
Yes.
But even at the time, it didn't seem like Patrick Willis would retire. But then again, Patrick Willis did have a really bad injury. He had the foot injury, and he just could not get over it. He couldn't stay on the field. He couldn't get healthy. And you got to the end of the year, and Harbaugh left, and you thought, well, I mean, at least P. Willie's coming back. And then he decided that, you know, I'm good. I'm going to call it a career after 8 years. And it did happen very abruptly. So you got me a little scared now when you think about it, because when you look about the parallel between those two eras, you're right, because they went, before they went to the Super Bowl, they lost that game to the Giants. And I'll never forget that game, because I was coming back from an overnight trip in Napa with my then wife, my now ex-wife, and we're listening to the game on the radio, and I said, we have got to watch this game. So we stopped at a restaurant called The Dead Fish. I don't know if you're familiar with The Dead Fish.
I am not.
You know by the Carquinez Bridge, right?
Yes.
Which connects Vallejo to Crockett. Right when you come across the Carquinez Bridge from Vallejo, on your right, as you're crossing the bridge, there's this place called The Dead Fish, which is a wonderful bar restaurant. It overlooks the Carquinez Strait. And so I told my then wife, we have got to see this game. We pull off.
Pull over.
We walk right in to a 200-person Filipino wedding. So the place is just completely packed. It's a party. There's a band. There's dancing. And I'm in the bar, and I'm locked in on this game. And it's an absolute nail biter, as you remember.
Yep.
And it was just one of those crazy games where I'll never forget where I was. And you're thinking, all right, Niners, you're going to get the ball. Oh, you're not going to get the ball back. And it's, I know, Grandy. I'm sorry, because you at the time were probably
2011.
Like
I was 15.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is peak, like, super fan era.
Peak, like, this
is
game,
the most important thing
this
in my
game,
world.
The result of this game will make me happy for a year or sad for a year.
Totally. At 15. And then Kyle Williams, God love him, with a second muff punt, and the rest is history. But you think about that era versus this era in terms of lost opportunities, because that team, they had an opportunity there. And then the next year in the Super Bowl, they had a chance. And then the year after that against Seattle, you had a great chance. You had first and goal at the 7. You had 4 cracks from the 7-yard line and couldn't get it done. So,
oh man!
And I'm not trying to make you feel bad or other Niner fans, but
I mean,
you know, you're drawing parallels to, you know, Patrick Willis going to the Hall of Fame and Alden Smith coming up here at the top of the hour, and it just reminds you of what you're saying, that nothing is guaranteed. Just because you have a good team doesn't mean you get to go back every year.
Yeah. Some love, by the way, for the Dead Fish on the text line, the Xfinity Mobile text line. Zucci Main says, driving past the Dead Fish right now, Dibs. 510 chiming in. It's an excellent place to eat and have a cold one. You're right, Dibs. But going back to the Super Bowl and the first and goal from the 7, Super Bowl wins a touchdown wins the Super Bowl.
Right.
And you win the Harbaugh Bowl, Jim beats John, and the rest would have been history. I remember thinking, because I think it was either a long completion to Vernon Davis down the left sideline to get first and goal, or maybe it was a long run by Frank Gore. But I remember thinking, Tibbs, and maybe this was all, maybe you can blame this all on me. I remember thinking once they got first and goal at the 7, because they got the ball with not a lot of time and they had to go the length of the field.
I'm looking at it here. They got it back with 4:19 to go at their own 20. And they're down 34-29. You need 6.
So ideally, you would just have a 4-minute, 15-second drive. You kill the entire clock. You punch it in at the buzzer and you win. You don't even give them a chance. And I was thinking,
Gore goes for 8. Okay. Kaepernick goes for 8. Incomplete to Vernon. 2nd and 10. Pass to Crabtree for 24. Now we're in business at the 40-yard line. Frank Gore, left end for 33 yards.
That was it.
Tackled by Ed Reed. 2:39 to go.
And I'm thinking, oh my God, we're going to score too early, Dibs. We're going to give Flacco and Ray Rice and Anquan Boldin and Jacoby Jones and Dennis Pitta. We're going to give them too much time.
Your memory
is incredible.
We score
too early.
1st and goal at the 7, 2:39 to go. LaMichael James goes for 2. And they let it go down to the 2-minute warning. And then Kaepernick incomplete to Crabtree on 2nd and 5. Niners call timeout. And that was the big one. They called timeout to...
They couldn't get the playoff.
Right.
Yeah.
And so Baltimore had a chance to ramp up the D. Incomplete to Crabtree. Incomplete to Crabtree. Super Bowl over. Season over. Dream over. Grandy in his room, door slammed, tears
just
for sure.
Just lying
flowing.
On the living room floor,
dude,
crying.
Shout out Windsor.
Shout out Windsor.
3 straight passes to Crabtree, 3 straight incompletes, and the Niners 1st and goal to 7. And the criticism then, and the criticism probably still now, is where was Frank Gore? You went LaMichael James, and then 3 passes to Crabtree. You had timeouts, and you didn't give Frank Gore the ball at all. It still burns. I can see your face.
It burns.
It burns. Oh, it burns. It burns.
And that pain is very similar to the pain of what this Shanahan era team has been dealing with. Now, there are a lot of parallels as we've been laying out. And this isn't like gloomy, like because this team never got it done, this team will never get it done. There are obviously a lot of differences. I don't anticipate Kyle Shanahan driving Jed York so far up the wall that Jed York says, well, you've been highly successful, but we're going to get rid of you. I just can't handle you anymore. More, like what happened with Jim Harbaugh and Jed York. Also, Jed York has learned from his experiences and is a much better owner and leader of this organization now than he was back then. So there's clear differences. And as long as Kyle Shanahan is here, Dibs, I think the Niners will continue to be a well-run and a well-oiled machine, and they'll have chances to compete. I don't anticipate this window just absolutely slamming shut like it did for the 49ers. I mean, they went from a conference championship loss to being 5-11 in 2 seasons. In 2 seasons. And then after 5-11, you were 2-14.
Right.
Off of a conference championship loss, where you went to the conference championship in 3 straight years. Once you went to the Super Bowl, 3 years after that, you were the worst team in football, 2-14.
Well, it's because of a number of factors. One, Jim Harbaugh openly and blatantly disrespected the owner, and they had a meeting, and he told the owner, this is for men only, and... So Jed York had to leave, and, you know, much chagrined, and Harbaugh alienated so many people, and he went 8-8. So then it was like, you got to go. And when
we can deal with it if you're going to conference championship games.
Of course.
But if you go 8-8,
well, he's got to go. And then their fallback plan was not Bochy, but Jim Tom Sula. So you didn't have a fallback plan. So you go to Tom Sula, and then after that, again, you didn't have a fallback plan, and you went to Chip Kelly.
Go Ducks.
And yeah, go Ducks, but go home, because he was an embarrassment.
He was very bad.
And not only that, but the roster had fallen into complete disrepair. So you went from, you know, having a great team, some of your guys aged out, Willis retires, your quarterback turned out to be, you know, either ostracized, not good enough, or both. Probably both, quite frankly, and you wound up with nothing. And so it was a complete rebuild by the time that Kyle Shanahan took over.
Yeah, that 2016 Niners team, do you have any idea who the Niners' leading receiver was that year? 2016.
I think that it was somebody really good. Not Anquan Boldin, but...
He led the 3 prior years. So he hung around for a couple... He hung around for the last Harbaugh year and then the Tom Sula year. But he was no longer a Niner after that.
Oh, wow. I'm just looking at it. Jeremy Curley?
Jeremy Curley was the Niners' leading receiver in Chip Kelly's year.
Yeah, and I mean, that was... Whatever. I mean, Colin Kaepernick was not great that year, but he was a lot. A lot of it was the byproduct of what he had around him, and... I'm looking at the roster right now, and Raheem Mostert as a rookie on that team.
Oh, wow. I didn't even realize he was on that team.
Yeah, didn't get a lot of chances, but you had Gabby, and you had basically nobody. Torrey Smith was the name I was thinking about as a guy who might have been leading receiver, but the roster that Kyle Shanahan inherited was so bad that it definitely took him some time to rebuild it, slowly retool it. Now you're in a spot where you're right, Grandy, even if this doesn't work out this year, it doesn't feel like the bottom would fall out and, you know, they would suddenly plummet into being a mediocre team. The roster's too good for that.
No doubt. No doubt. And, you know, this all started by kind of reminiscing on Patrick Willis's retirement, because he's about to be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame tomorrow, and it's very well deserved. He retired after 8 seasons in the NFL at age 29. Obviously, the comparison for that era, Patrick Willis, this era's Patrick Willis, is Fred Warner. Fred Warner, 6 years, age 27. The equivalent would be Fred Warner playing 2 more seasons and hanging it up. Like, that's how shocking it was. And again, there was the injury, again, that Patrick Willis dealt with near the tail end of his career that kept him out for the majority of that last final season. And every year that Fred Warner has played, he has not missed a single game. He's played in every single game because that's who Fred is. And I'm not saying I anticipate that. And of course, I'm not even rooting for that. But, like, these things are entirely out of the 49ers' control. And this is even before we're talking about the contracts and the money of it all. This is just individual who is maybe thinking, all right, like, it's all over for me. I'm going to hang it up and this thing's done. Like, there's so many things that are outside of your control as a team that need to go right for you to have a chance. And one of those is your middle linebacker not retire a little bit earlier than you were expecting, because he's the linchpin of this whole thing defensively. And as the Niners found out when he didn't have Patrick Willis anymore, suddenly that defense became really, really bad.
Yeah, and you didn't have Navarro Bowman either. So you lost both your linebackers, and that would be akin to Fred Greenlaw not coming back and then Fred Warner also stepping away from football. And just to give some perspective to Patrick Willis, we talked about him playing 8 years, 7 Pro Bowls. He was Defensive Rookie of the Year, and he was an All-Pro in 6 of the 8 years. Fred Warner, 6 years, 3 Pro Bowls, and 3 times he was an All-Pro. And this past year, he was top 6 in Defensive Player of the Year. So as good as Fred has been, and he's been very good, Patrick Willis was even at another level of how good he was. He led the league in tackles twice. And as I mentioned, he was a Pro Bowler multiple times. Pro Bowler in every year except his last year when he got hurt. So Fred Warner is a 91, a 92 out of a scale of 1 to 100. But Patrick Willis was a 98. So that's even as we compare the two, Fred Warner is not, he's not the same player that Patrick Willis was. Yeah. And that's no disrespect to Fred Warner. It just tells you how incredible Patrick Willis was in his 8 short years.
Man, he was so good. Like, if you could dream up a middle linebacker, you would come out with Patrick Willis. If you could create a middle linebacker in a lab, 6'1", 242, and he ran as fast as a defensive back. He could cover any receiver, not any, most receivers in the NFL. He would just absolutely stick on any single tight end in this league. He was so incredible, and there are so many similarities between what he was able to do and what Fred Warner is able to do. But there was, like, and this is absolutely not a knock on Fred Warner, but there was just a different level of ferocity with Patrick Willis. And he obviously was bigger and just a little more physically imposing and daunting. Fred is incredible, but you're right. Patrick Willis is just that prototypical, old school, gigantic triceps, biceps, shoulders, just absolutely incredible. There might not be another Niner linebacker like Patrick Willis.
Right, and a little bit of a different scheme, too. I think they ran a lot more 3-4, and this team is a lot more 4-3, and so Fred Warner is asked to do things that Patrick Willis wasn't asked to do, and, you know, Fred now in coverage a lot more than Patrick was, but different era, certainly, in just 10 years of football. But if Fred Warner continues on this trajectory, he's got a chance to go down as a Hall of Famer, especially if this Niner team can find its way to get in a Super Bowl, the one thing that Patrick Willis was unable to get.
No doubt. I think Fred's on the path to the Super Bowl, or to the Hall of Fame. Honestly, I think if you were to, I don't know, try to put a number, a percentage chance on any Niners current defenders that's headed to the Super Bowl, I think Fred has a higher chance than anybody else.
Of being a Hall of Famer?
I think over Bosa for me.
No, not me. I think Bosa has a better chance. But the hard thing about the Hall of Fame discussion in football is you only get 5 or 6 a year to go in. So even this year, when the class gets inducted tomorrow, take some time out to look at the list of guys who were finalists.
That didn't make it.
Yeah, and even guys who were semifinalists who didn't even make it to that last group. To make the Pro Football Hall of Fame is tougher than any of the other Hall of Fames relative to how many people play the sport, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and I get it's difficult to get in, and oftentimes you're probably left with someone who maybe you feel like should be in but isn't, but it also amplifies the meaning of being a Hall of Famer in the NFL.
Our coworker Lorenzo Neal, he should be a Hall of Famer.
The best fullback ever.
He's up there. And
he should be in.
If you look at this year, there were seven true fullbacks nominated, and you could look at all seven of them, Moose Johnson and Larry Centers is among them, Max Strong and Lorenzo Neal. A lot of these guys deserve to be in, but we don't look at the fullback the way we look at offensive guard and offensive tackle, for example, which is a shame.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, time for a break here on Willard and Dibs. Coming up in a half an hour at 4 o'clock, Alden Smith, teammate of Patrick Willis's, P. Willie, going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame tomorrow. We'll talk with Alden Smith about that and maybe reminisce on some of those memories from back in the day, comparisons of that Niner team to this Niner team, and a whole lot more. That's coming up in 30 minutes. 888-957-9570 is the number to call if you want to join the conversation. And be sure to join 95.7 The Game at Harding Park on Friday, September 6th for the Pettinelli Financial Partners Golf Tournament benefiting the Autism Society San Francisco Bay Area. Go to 957thegame.com to learn more. Presented by ATCO Pest Control, the Bay Area's locally family-owned pest control company. More coming up next on Willard and Dibs.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Mark Randy in for Mark Willard alongside Dan Dibley here on 95.7 The Game. And a Dibs, to go off of what we were just talking about. Oh, did I lose it? Where did it go? We're talking about Hall of Famers that are currently on the Niners defense, or future Hall of Famers.
Yep.
If you were to put a percentage.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
I feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything
taken
care of.
It took forever. And the worst part? Hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Chance on it, or a number on it. If you were to bet, who is more likely to be a Hall of Famer, Fred Warner or Nick Bosa? Let me bring the other one up again really quick. Who do you think, for Pro Football Reference, has the higher Hall of Fame monitor score among active players? Fred Warner or Nick Bosa? Who do you think has the higher score?
I think that Fred would have the higher score, but Nick Bosa, I believe, with more years left to go in his career, would trend toward having ultimately a better chance.
So it's really close, and I guess it depends on how much you believe in the Pro Football Reference's Hall of Fame probability score and how they determine this. Nick Bosa, their Hall of Fame score, the Hall of Fame monitor score, as they call it, 43.68 is Nick Bosa's Hall of Fame monitor score. Fred Warner's 44.38. So less than a point more Fred Warner over Nick Bosa, but very, very, very close.
And just for some comparative value, Patrick Willis's Hall of Fame monitor score was 107.1, and the average Hall of Fame score for inside linebacker, 105.65. Mm. So Patrick Willis was just above the average all-time score for Hall of Fame inside linebackers, and he actually ranks ninth all-time among Hall of Famers in their Hall of Fame monitor score. And here are the other ones: Ray Lewis, Mike Singletary, Jack Lambert, Dick Butkus, all Hall of Famers. Luke Kuechly is number five. He will be a Hall of Famer when he is eligible, and he'll be eligible in the next year's voting, which will come up in December. He'll be 5 years out at that point. And I think Luke Kuechly might find his way into being a first ballot Hall of Famer. Here are the other ones who are above Patrick Willis: Brian Urlacher, Zach Thomas, both Hall of Famers. Bobby Wagner, who just retired last year. So he's got a ways to go. But based on this, all of those guys have an above average Hall of Fame score, and all but two, Luke Kuechly and Bobby Wagner, are in the Hall of Fame.
And the reason they're not, they will be, but the reason they're not in the Hall of Fame yet is because they're not eligible yet. They will be in the Hall of Fame. So everyone above Patrick Willis, surefire Hall of Famer, and then the group below them, Hall of Famers as well. And then sneaking in there a few spots below Patrick Willis is Navarro Bowman.
Yeah, yep. And he, you know, at 69.98, not in the Hall of Fame, but he's above a guy who just is getting in this year, Randy Gradishar, who got in through the Veterans Committee, a guy who's now 40 years out of football. So there's a chance that Patrick, or Navarro Bowman, rather, could get in down the road. I don't think that he is going to get voted in by the current committee, because there's such a glut. And when you look at future classes, as guys become eligible, whether it's Eli Manning and Drew Brees and other players who are of recent vintage, guys like Navarro Bowman, who is now 7 years removed, you kind of get lost in the shuffle a little bit.
Yeah, you do. Navarro Bowman, awesome career. And while Patrick Willis's career, I guess you could say, was kind of cut short because of his surprise retirement, Navarro Bowman's career was certainly cut short. He still continued to play after that horrific knee injury, and he had a couple of good years with the Raiders, I remember, but that knee injury never happened. I'm sure that his Hall of Fame monitor score, according to the Pro Football Reference, would be a little bit higher. He was so good for so many years. And it kind of begs the question, Dibs, and I know the guys earlier, Evan and Guru, when they brought it up during the crossover, were kind of debating this themselves. the Harbaugh era defense, this era defense, this past year Niner defense, I think it's a relatively easy conversation. But say you go back to the 2019 season when it was rookie Bosa and you had Fred and you had Richard Sherman and you had all those guys, that defense versus say the 2012 defense or right around that time, any of the Harbaugh years, really those first 3 years of Harbaugh, that defense was absolutely incredible. Picking a defense, one or the other, picking individual positions is really difficult as well. Like, which position group are you taking? P. Willie and Navarro Bowman, Fred Warner, Dre Greenlaw. Probably P. Willie and Bowman because you have a surefire Hall of Famer there, and those two guys complemented each other so well. But it's incredibly wild that Niner fans, within the last decade, a little more than a decade, the last 12 years, have a linebacker core that you would pick kind of easily over Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw. That is just wild.
Yes, it's wild, but it gives you an idea of just how good they were. And if you want to talk about, you know, the defensive front, and we're going to talk to Alden Smith coming up here in 20 minutes, and you had Justin Smith, the Cowboy, and Alden Smith. And if you want to compare them to Nick Bosa and, I guess, Eric Armstead, if you want to go back to 2019 or DeForest Buckner or however you want to parse that out, it feels like you still would take that old school defense as well. And the one thing that may give that other defense an edge as well is Richard Sherman. And I was just looking at his Hall of Fame Monitor score.
Oh, I'm sure that's up there.
And it's the Hall of Fame Monitor methodology. You get points for first team offense or defense, second team offense or defense, Pro Bowls, and you get weighted value based on if you're all defense, if you're all pro, and if you win a championship and all the rest of it. And just looking at Richard Sherman, if I asked you about Richard Sherman, is he a Hall of Famer?
Yes.
You go automatic yes.
Yeah, no doubt.
Interesting, because his Hall of Fame score is at 83.13 and the average is 98. But the only players above him who are not in the Hall of Fame, the only guy is Patrick Peterson. And he just retired 2 years ago, and it feels like he's going to be a Hall of Famer. But below Richard Sherman, or right at his same level, Dave Grayson, Lester Hayes, not Hall of Famers, Earl Thomas, eligible this upcoming year, Eric Weddle, not eligible yet. So Richard's a little bit in that tweener area where I do think that his reputation will help him get into the Hall of Fame, but he's not necessarily, based on these metrics, a surefire guy.
I think he's getting in. Probably not first ballot, but he was so good. And I mean, when you have an iconic defense like that, like the Legion of Boom, and they won a Super Bowl, and they should have won a couple of Super Bowls, and then he did it again with the Niners, and obviously if he won that Super Bowl, maybe his score would be a whole lot higher, but Richard Sherman was the linchpin on that Seattle defense that was so good, that dominated the league for like a 4-year stretch. Only that one Super Bowl again, but they could have easily had another. They could have easily had a couple more.
And there are guys below him in score that have gotten in, such as Rondé Barber, who just got in, Darryl Green, Ty Law, and a guy by the name of John Lynch.
Oh, wow.
John Lynch further down in the Hall of Fame Monitor score, who also has gotten into the Hall of Fame. So I think you're right about Richard Sherman. I do think that he eventually gets in.
Yeah. We do have a text from on the Xfinity mobile text line, the 925. I think baseball is the hardest Hall of Fame to get into. That's fair. I do think whatever your opinion is, I think most of us would agree, it's definitely not basketball, though.
True.
It's either football or baseball if we're talking about the three big sports.
Right, and I was basing it on the percentage of players versus those who do get into the Hall of Fame. Mm. Because in baseball, especially now that we've gone away from the small hall, we're going to a more of a bigger Hall of Fame where, you know, voters now get 10 votes. And as a result, you're seeing bigger Hall of Fame classes. So I think the texter's right historically. But now if you look at Hall of Fame classes, we're starting to see 3 and 4 players per year get in. And baseball, remember, there's only 25 or 26 people on an active roster. Football's got 46. And even if you expand to the 54-man roster, so relative to roster size, I think it's a lot closer than you think.
Yeah, Yeah, we kind of got off on tangent here talking about Hall of Fame, but I think the larger point, and give us a call and tell us, Fred Warner, Nick Bosa, who's more likely to go into the Hall of Fame, comparing eras, what defense would you take, that Harbaugh era defense, or maybe the 2019 Niner defense, 888-957-9570. I think the larger point here, Dibs, is this Niner team has, at least on the defensive side and certainly on the offensive side, we're talking specifically defense here, but this Niner team has future Hall of Famers scattered throughout this roster. Trent Williams is certainly a Hall of Famer. Christian McCaffrey is going to be a Hall of Famer. Early returns for certain other players, you can make the case. You can make a case for George Kittle. I mean, one of the best tight ends of this era and maybe the best all-around tight end of this era. He's certainly up there. It's him and Travis Kelce. Kelsey's a much better receiving tight end, but Kittle is the best blocking tight end this league has seen in quite a while. Kittle's up there on defense. We're talking about Fred Warner and Nick Bosa. You know, there's a lot of talent on this team, and when you compare it with what happened to that older era of Niners teams, the 2012, the Harbaugh era, and how quickly that window closed, Dibs, thinking back on that era, it's kind of leading me to this feeling going into this season of, and don't get me wrong, I'm excited and I can't wait for football season. And, you know, we're going on the quest for six once again, trying to get that sixth Lombardi trophy. But I almost am going into this season, Dibs, because of how my brain works and how I remember that Harbaugh era and everything we've talked about for the last hour plus. I'm almost going into this coming season with more of a feeling of nervousness than excitement, because I'm just honestly scared that we're going to go through potentially another era of Niners football where you don't get the glory, you don't get the ring, you don't get the Super Bowl, and all these players ride off into the sunset without it. And I'm not rooting for it not to happen, of course. And this is a fantastic chance to get it done. The Niners, I think, should be Super Bowl favorites. Not that it's automatically going to happen that way. Of course it doesn't. But because of what happened to that older era and how this team has fallen short a couple of times, and knowing that windows aren't open forever, I'm almost going into the season with like an overwhelming sense of nervousness as opposed to excitement, because I'm just so scared of what might happen if they fall short once again, and who knows if they have another chance.
It's an interesting word to use, because, and we talked about this on the show thread a little bit, you're not nervous about the Giants right now because you kind of resigned to what the Giants are and where the Giants are. If they make the wild card, you're thrilled.
That's great.
And yeah, you're surprised. And it's, you know, whatever happens from there, happens from there. And the Warriors, coming off a year where you're the 10th seed and 2 years removed from a championship that was a complete surprise to many, and you've got four titles, well, you're not nervous. You would love one more run, but honestly, if the Warriors never play another playoff game, if they never win another playoff game, if they are in the lottery every year between now and 2030, you're a little bit bummed, but you can always step back and say, wow, what did we have? We had the greatest run. We had four, and this goes from before you were born. And I remember all the years in the 80s and the 90s and the aughts where they were miserable. And the high water mark was when Barron dunked on Kirilenko in a series that they lost in five. And when you think about it from those terms, what I've already experienced as a Warrior fan, I'll never be nervous again. Even if they get to the finals and they go on a run, it's all just icing on the cake. It's the cherry on the sundae, whatever the analogy is that you want to have. But for the Niners, they haven't won a Super Bowl in 30, and that's before you were born. And that's, I mean, shoot, a bunch of marriages for me and a bunch of kids. I got three kids and a bunch of problems. I've had 17 jobs, whatever I've gone through. I barely remember what that was like. So I'm with you. You have this team, this window, this roster, these expectations. It's nervousness a little bit, and I'm not nervous yet, but when we get to, and I think about last year in the Green Bay game where you should beat Green Bay, and you're struggling with Green Bay, and you're trailing Green Bay, and oh my God, you're going to lose to Green Bay, and then Brock gets the ball back with 6 minutes left. I was nervous.
Oh my God.
Every play was like, they've got to find a way. And Brock was cool, and Brock got it done, and you won the game, and you thought, okay.
Thank God. Whew.
And then you got Detroit, and you're thinking, all right.
It all happens again.
But Detroit's not ready. You're going to beat Detroit, and then whop, 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 whop. You fall, thank you. You fall behind Detroit again, and it's
I'm
like,
gonna do my stuff.
Oh my God, you're going to lose to Detroit of all teams? I'm nervous. And then they come back, and the second half is remarkable, and you beat Detroit, and it's like, okay, just get to Kansas City. You know, it's the Super Bowl, and I said all year last year, if you go to the Super Bowl and lose, I will not hold it against you because only one team wins it. Just get there. And they got there, and then you're in it, and you're in the game, and McCaffrey fumbles, and you're like, oh my God, they have this game. They should win it. And then you get to overtime, and I'm nervous again, and they go down, and they should score a touchdown, and they don't, and they settle for three. And at that moment, it was like, oh boy, I'm nervous, but I'm also a little sick to my stomach knowing what the likely outcome is going to be.
Yeah.
And so when it goes the way that it goes, you're bummed. And now skip ahead all the way to now, August 2nd, and I'm with you, Grandy. I'm thinking about the year, and I'm nervous because not that they should win the Super Bowl because it's not that easy, but they should be good. And they should be in a spot where...
And they should be like one of the final four teams standing.
Right. Come January, we should be nervous again. And so I think you put it perfectly. It's a little bit of nervousness as opposed to the other two teams.
Yeah. At the 707 on the Xfinity mobile text line summed it up well. High stakes, it's anxiety. Like, that's what comes with the territory, and there's no doubt about it. I wouldn't have it any other way. I'd rather go into a season nervous about whether, oh, is this the last chance we have to win a Super Bowl, than already be resigned to the fact that my team's going to be terrible. This is obviously a good problem to have, but there's also this other half of, and it was, you summed up the feeling very well, watching that Green Bay playoff game, and I can't imagine how the players feel. Maybe they don't feel that way in the moment because they're so locked in and you're focused on just trying to get a win, but I'm sure what most people in Levi's were feeling and what I was feeling watching the game here at the studio getting ready to do our post-game show last year, it was, after all that, after that 17-game regular season, after you fought tooth and nail to get the one seed, after Brock Purdy put together a near MVP season, after Brandon Ayuk introduced himself as a number one wide receiver, after Fred Warner put together another all-pro season, after you got through all the Bosa drama of the offseason, after all of that, the three-game losing streak, you lose Debo, you lose Trent, you get him back, Debo then gets hurt again in the Green Bay game. After all of this, you're just going to lose in the first playoff game you play? And then you start thinking, okay, they won, and they won again, and then you lose in the Super Bowl. And now you're at a point where you have to just lace them up and do it again. It's so incredibly daunting. As a fan, I'm exhausted already just thinking about the climb that this team has to go through. Yeah. I can't imagine what the players and the coaches are feeling like, and they're the ones who actually have to exert the energy to actually go out and make it a reality. It is incredible to me that these guys are able to compartmentalize and deal with the disappointment of that past year and just be willing and ready to say, all right, we're starting from ground zero again. We're ready
exactly.
to go. Let's make it. Let's get it done. That seems so just difficult for me to even contextualize how hard that must be.
Yeah, and you use the dis word saying disappointment, and they use the dis word meaning discipline, which is you get to a point, whether it's the next day or you give yourself a week or maybe you take a month, and then you realize, okay, I've got to do A, B, C all the way through Z to get myself ready to go out there and do it again. And my teammates have to do the exact same thing. And the draftees and the free agent signings and the coaches and the ownership and Parag Marate and Al Guido in the president's office. And everybody's got to go about doing it again. And you all have to pull yourself up by the bootstraps. And at some point, you either watch the Super Bowl or you don't watch the Super Bowl. You do whatever you have to do, and you realize, all right, come April, or, you know, the draft is coming, free agency's coming, I got to work on my body, I got to get healthy, and when we get to camp in mid to late July, I've got to be ready. And part of it is the dread of doing it again, but part of it's also the thrill. And I'm not going to compare what we do to what they do because physically it's not even close. But I do think about like Sunday night when you get through your weekend and you start to look at the week that we do or anybody in your job. It's like, all right, what do I have to do this week? If you're doing construction, it's like, okay, this week we're doing the foundation or we're framing or we're doing whatever we're doing. And so you start to lay out your week. And if you're an NFL player, you get into July and you're like, okay, here's our schedule. Here's the camp schedule. Here's what I'm trying to do. Here are my goals. Here are the team goals. Let's go. And it's exciting. And if you like what you do, and I know that I love what I do, and I know you do as well. You get into a week or you get into a year, or for us, it's a ratings quarter or whatever it is. And you realize, all right, we got to go out there and do our job. And that's part of that is human nature. But I'm with you in terms of being a football player where you're that close. It's hard to not look back and think, man, if Burford would have blocked, or I think it was Burford, not Brendel. If Burford just would have gone the right way. And if you're Ayuk, you're thinking, man, if he would have just looked at me, I was open, and you know, if Moody would have made this kick or if this would have happened, all these little things, we could have this, that, and the other. But then you got to realize life goes on and you got to get back there and do it again.
Yeah, you're talking about a player looking back. I also would, if I was in that position, and it's hard for me to even imagine being a professional football player, I wish I was as good at anything as any of those Niner players are at playing the game of football. I would have a hard time not looking ahead as well.
True.
And knowing, like, all right, we've got 9 players in the NFL top 100, and 7 of them are in the top 30. 7 of these players are in the top 30 of the NFL 100. We are destined to win the Super Bowl. This is the year it's going to happen. And of course, you can't think that way, because if you do that, there's no chance you make it. You got to take it day by day. And it's the cliche that all of these athletes say, but there is absolute truth in it. Whenever they say it, take it day by day, take it step by step. You were talking about a construction worker. Before you can build the house or build the building, you got to lay the foundation. It's step by step. Yep. Then, you know, goes up the support beams and all of that. And you do it step by step. It's the only way you can get the job done. But if I was in their shoes, if I was in that Niner locker room, if I was on that roster trying to win a Super Bowl, I would have a really hard time not looking ahead, because you know how talented you are. And that's where I think the challenge comes in for the coaching staff, for the leaders of the team, for Fred Warner, for Nick Bosa, for George Kittle, for Debo, for Ayuk, for Trent, for Brock, for all these guys to have the right mindset going into this kind of season, because those are the kind of expectations that if you believe them too much, it might ultimately be your downfall.
Exactly. And you get caught slipping and something happens early that derails you from what you're trying to do. And, you know, I've coached a little bit, coached some high school teams, and I had a team that 2001 North Coast Section Finals boys volleyball, we lost on the road at Dublin in 4. It's a day that I will never forget.
It's a rough loss.
It's actually, we won the first set, and so we were thinking we were about to pull off a stunner. We were a year ahead of schedule. We lose in 4, and so we go back, and I'm grinding over it all off season. And we get to that first practice, and I had everyone back. I lost one player off that team, so I knew we'd be good, but your instinct is to start at square 11 because you were just there, but you realize you got to go back to the basics.
So hard.
We got to run through everything again. We got to build it back up. We got to start from scratch. And so that becomes the difficult part, because like the Niners are going through right now, we were nasty last year. We were one play away, yet everyone else is getting better. You have new players. You got rookies. You got to start the whole process over again.
I'm so nervous.
You gotta start from scratch.
I'm so nervous.
You look nervous.
I'm nervous. I'm scared.
You got a full month until the Jets come in, so. The only thing I'm nervous about right now is just getting everyone healthy. That and getting Brandon and Trent into camp.
Yeah. Kyle Shanahan did speak today. You mentioned Spencer Burford and him missing that block in the Super Bowl. Broken hand. Does not need surgery, though. So there is a little bit of good news. Does not need surgery, Spencer Burford. Got to hit a break here in a second, but we do also have an update. Kyle Shanahan asked about his handshake.
I hated this answer.
His handshake with Brandon Ayuk. Let's just take a listen. Here's Kyle Shanahan.
Had a very enthusiastic hug with Brandon Ayuk yesterday, and it got national media attention because it signaled something. What did that signal?
This is usually how we greet each other. honestly. You guys would see maybe a lot more hugs if in here if we had a film for you guys, but we're not on Hard Knocks, so just the only one on the field. You haven't been on the field a lot, and we walk by each other, and it's usually how we greet each other. Bro hug. Nothing more, nothing less.
Where things stand with that? I mean, is it still stalemate? Any progress?
Yeah, no updates. Same with Trent.
Just a bro hug. Just how we greet each other.
The correct answer is, well, you know, he's about to sign and stuff, so I wanted to congratulate him and stuff, and he's going to sign a big deal, and I asked him if I could borrow $5 million, and he said sure and stuff, and so it's kind of what happened there and stuff.
It would have been a better answer.
Much
I agree.
Much better.
Yeah, I would have liked
hug.
That. Come on, Kyle. It's how they greet each other. He hadn't been on the field a lot lately.
And if you see me around the office, Granny, I'm a big bro hug guy.
Yeah, I know you.
Not so much with you and Lucas, but I just wrapped up Carter during the break. I had to apologize.
That was not a bro hug.
You missed it. I was a little out of pocket. I had to bring it in.
You looked like you were behind the wheel in some traffic is what it looked like.
Yeah, it might have been had some anger there.
All right. We got to hit a break. Alden Smith is coming up on the other side. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. Niner great. He had a great stretch with the Niners. Alden Smith, he's coming up on the other side. Former teammate of Patrick Willis, who's going into the Hall of Fame tomorrow. That's on the other side on Willard and Dibb.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2 foot tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.